Welcome into the Fan Pregame here on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Ailish and Justin, for the next hour as we get you set for the second night of Game 1s in Round 2 in the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll have Carolina and Washington kicking things off at 7 p.m. on Sportsnet, followed by Edmonton and Vegas, a 9 p.m. start on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 360. If you're looking for the Blue Jays, they're in action later tonight against the Angels on the road for a 9 p.m. start on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet 1. So we'll go through all of that for you. Justin Williams will join us, Mr. Game 7, in about 10 minutes. And we'll go through the Carolina and Washington series, of course. And then later on, we'll talk to Carter Hutton because, of course, goalies, a lot of hot topic about goaltending today, including Anthony Stolarz. And we'll go around the rest of the Stanley Cup playoffs and the goaltenders that are in.
Two perfect guests to grill about the Bennett Stolarz situation from last night.
Yes.
Do you want to start there? Do you want to get this over with to an extent?
Yeah, sure.
So everyone's seen it by now. Sam Bennett not suspended. No supplementary discipline for elbow punch. Still not exactly sure what it was. Sort of the back of the head and ear area of Anthony Stolarz. Stolarz, of course, eventually leaves the game. Not before vomiting on the bench, concussion-like symptoms, I suppose. Don't want to, connect too many dots here, but not a great scene for the Maple Leafs seeing Stolarz leave in a stretcher after the game, but out of the arena last night. Anyway, Sam Bennett's role in all this and Sam Bennett's role in a lot of other things previously. Do you believe that the accumulation of things should have amounted to something, Ailish?
Like a suspension? How about a penalty? We'll start there.
Okay.
I think it could have been a penalty. I think he clearly had contact with the goalie that shouldn't have happened. And obviously, in the situation, Stolarz played for a little bit longer, then was leaving the game, and he's obviously hurt now. And in hindsight, we know it's a lot worse. But I think it could have certainly been a penalty. I don't know how you weigh accumulation of everything that this guy has done in his life before, but it looks intentional in a sense. And he's got a history. And Chris Black, a producer here at Sportsnet, had a great thread on Twitter, Down to Black. You can follow it there. And I think he accumulated every hit that Sam Bennett ever made in his life and put it on Twitter. So you can take a look and value how much of that is intentional or not. But last night felt intentional to me.
Yeah, credit to Chris for doing that, but it's pretty clear that the Department of Player Safety isn't perusing Twitter.
No, of course.
They're just going to go.
They missed their opportunity.
They're going to go about things the way they're going to go about things, and I feel like the accumulation is not something they necessarily build in. Yes, if you do something before and do it again, they're going to use that against you, given that you have a rap sheet, but just because you did something in addition or the long line of some things, I don't think it's going to put that over the top. In fact, you know, If Stolarz didn't react, if Stolarz didn't go down, if Stolarz didn't hold his head, if Stolarz didn't leave the game, I don't think anyone even notices that that happened, really, if we're being honest. And there's also the fact that Stolarz took a pretty hard shot off the chin that snapped his helmet off, and there are some people who are connecting some post-concussive reactions within his reaction to that. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot that goes into this. Usually, you take into account, you know, what happened to the individual that was harmed in one of these situations, but it's even hard. It's hard to pinpoint that. It's hard to put your finger on that exactly. And it's just, I think there's too many assumptions that would have to be made to put yourself in a situation where you would suspend Sam Bennett. So that's how we got, I think, to this point. I think we should spin it forward beyond this in the time that we have before Justin Williams. And by the way, Carter Hutton's going to come on, and we like perfect guy to ask about contact in and around the crease, given that he played in an NHL crease and probably dealt with Sam Bennett before. But the Maple Leafs won the game, and the Maple Leafs were probably had put the finishing touches on at least the first period, maybe their best period of playoff hockey in this entire run of disappointment, mainly for them in the Stanley Cup playoffs. After last night's game, it was really the first time for me as like my grand take that I thought, you know, there's Stanley Cup potential here this team.
That's good. Yesterday, you picked the Florida Panthers to win, so.
Yeah, and they.
I love that you have seen a different side in one game. We're reacting to things.
So they got a very Florida, filthy Florida performance, right?
Yes.
And they just dealt with it. Mm-hmm. Anthony Stolarz, Joseph Woll, rather, was a little shaky afterwards. but they didn't overreact. Previously, teams overreact to everything, right? Mm-hmm. Nazem Kadri out for the series, cross-check, boom. Like, it was very easy to drag them into a different game. But the Maple Leafs just went about their business last night. And even with the Sam Bennett thing and all the conversation around it, it feels like the Maple Leafs aren't going to be phased or affected in the least bit, other than the fact that they might not have Anthony Stolarz in net. So all credit to them for the performance, the win, the way they reacted to all this, and I think on the ice, and the way they reacted to it off the ice. I think the Maple Leafs deserve full marks, and I, again, can finally see a world where you could get past this Florida team and go to a Stanley Cup final based on what I saw last night. I was unbelievably impressed by their game.
Yeah, I think what Craig Berube said today when he spoke to the media, where he was just like, I'm done talking about this Sam Bennett situation, we're moving forward, is exactly how the Leafs have to kind of respond in terms of their play. And tomorrow night when they play game two of the second round against the Florida Panthers, there'll be a lot of discussion about, okay, who's going to take out Sam Bennett? Who's going to, you know, have some vengeance for Stolarz? I think the Leafs just want to play their style of hockey, and where the Panthers kind of got the Tampa Bay Lightning off track was by pulling them into their type of game. And that was a really physical series. We saw suspensions. Like, it was all over the place. The Leafs just need to play how they played in that first period, where they get out there quick and they score right away and they play fast and they play within their boundaries, and they can win the series. That's where I thought that they could win it. What they don't want to do is start running around trying to be a Florida Panther, if that makes a sense. Like, makes sense. The Leafs can play within their line of fast, smart hockey, and they should be able to win. It'll be interesting to see how they respond to the situation with Stolarz, but the best way to respond to it is to win the series. Like, I know that sounds very high school, you know, like, oh, just beat them on the scoreboard. But I mean, I really think that if they just focus on their style of hockey, they can win the series, and what's better revenge than that?
Searching for examples all season long why the Leafs are different this year under Craig Berube as opposed to Sheldon Keefe or Mike Babcock or whomever in recent vintage. Not overreacting to what mm-hmm. Sam Bennett did, what the Florida Panthers intend to do. That would be the most obvious example of how they're different, and I think the way through this series. If they decide to play Florida's game, it's going to go in the favor of the Florida Panthers. So I really think this is now the key to the series. The Sam Bennett thing is going to be the backdrop for everything, but will it define the series? If it does, mm-hmm. it probably favors Florida. If it doesn't, the Maple Leafs are in a great position.
Yeah, that's it exactly. Like, they are built to play not Florida Panthers hockey at times. Like, yeah, we saw some moments where that was a physical game besides the Sam Bennett part. Like, Leafs were finishing their checks. They were really heavy defensively. Like, they were rubbing guys out in the corner. Like, it was really an intense hockey game. But that's okay for the Leafs. It's when it starts to becoming what Tkachuk was doing, trying to grab Marner at the end of the game and hit him with the knee. And like, you just don't need to get into that. Like, you can just beat him, you know. Mm-hmm. You can just be the better team. So
high school style, that might get it done.
It'll be interesting tomorrow. There's a lot of emotion around this. Obviously, if you go on social media, all you're seeing are videos of Sam Bennett's history of hitting people. Like, if I'm a Maple Leaf, I'm just going to show up and do what I do best, which is play our style of hockey, which has gotten us to this point.
Very quickly, much of the online discourse, and again, it probably shouldn't shape what we're talking about all the time, but a lot of people are, hey, the NHL doesn't care about concussions with the Sam Bennett non-ruling. Mm-hmm. But I think a good portion of those people would also like to see Anthony Stolarz in net in game two. Mm-hmm. So if we care about concussions, let's care about concussions when it doesn't serve you, or when it serves everyone, or when it serves, you know, the player first. If Anthony Stolarz, who A, stretchered out, B, mm-hmm. vomiting on the bench, C, D, what, you can go down the line. If he plays tomorrow night, like, it's hard to say that there's much care about concussions and head injuries.
Yeah.
Right? The same way George Parros may not. Again, that's other people's words.
It seems pretty
crazy.
There's
no way Anthony Stolarz can play in game two. There's no way.
No, like, it feels pretty, I didn't even think twice about ruling him out mentally.
Craig Berube
myself
did not rule him out.
Well, maybe that's just mind games. Like, I have been stretchered off an ice due to a concussion, and I have dealt with those symptoms, and I know how serious they can be. And I also, in the same situation, had vomiting and loss of consciousness, and it was in a hockey game too. And it is not something you rebound the next day. I'll tell you that. It took me quite a while, and it can be something that affects the rest of your life. Like, concussions are really serious, and I've had a few of them. And it can really alter the future of your life. So I hope that Anthony Stolarz takes his time. If this is what he has, we don't know if he has a concussion, but all the symptoms that we were talking about kind of line up that way. The good thing is I feel really confident with Joseph Woll. This is something we talked about all season long. Leafs had two very competitive goaltenders down the stretch, both fighting for that 1A, 1B position. And Stolarz did edge in front of Woll near the end, but Woll got in last night after not playing for 3 weeks. Like, he's going to get a day here to be like, okay, I can hang. I can be a playoff performer. So it's not like all of a sudden we're seeing a goaltender that we have no faith in. Like, Joseph Woll was an amazing piece of this team this year that got them to win an Atlantic, top of the Atlantic. So I feel okay with it.
He's been thrust into similar situations and done quite well. So we'll talk about it a little bit more with Carter Hutton. But Joseph Woll, you know, the Leafs should be in decent hands with him.
Okay, that game's tomorrow night, but we got a doubleheader here on Sportsnet kicking off the second day of round two with Carolina Washington as our first game on Sportsnet, 7 p.m. puck drop. And who better to help us get set for it than Justin Williams, Hurricane Special Assistant to the GM. Justin, we appreciate you coming on. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Oh, we're well. It's a little bit of drama in Toronto after last night, but we're going to shift forward and look at some of the new series that are underway. And of course, I guess we could look back a little bit because you are Mr. Game 7, and we were spoiled for some Game 7s this weekend. It was a back-to-back chaos with the Jets and the Stars. Like, when you watch something like that, that's gonna mean something to you. Like, wow, you know, I love a Game 7.
I was watching it just on the couch with my family, and we were just flabbergasted, just like everybody, just jumping out of our seats, just couldn't believe what we saw. And my wife, even, who really only cares when I played, jumped up and was like, "Oh my gosh, what is going on?" And it's just wild that back to back nights that happened. And oof, I mean, pure elation for one team, but I always look at the other side being like, wow, what a collapse, and how does that feel in that room? Because that's a devastating loss for both teams.
What was the most emotional handshake line you were in? Because you mentioned a couple game sevens, and the emotions will run high in those. And clearly, Mikko Rantanen with so many people on the other side, I'm sure you don't have a exact parallel to Mikko Rantanen's situation this year, as you know. But do you have like a handshake line, a handshake memory that stands out?
I signed as a free agent in Carolina from Washington, and the year I left was the year Washington won the cup. And actually, funny enough, the next year we played them was the next year, and they were defending cup champions, and I was in Carolina, and a ton of friends, and I was super proud of what they did the year before, but we played them that very next year, and just having such close friends, you know, on that team, and putting that aside and hitting them and doing everything you can to get an edge on them. Finally, when that series is over, it was a nice just exhale for me, and just, you know, obviously the best tradition in sports. We talk about it all the time. That all right, the battle is over, a team won. And just shaking the hands of your good friends on the other side. And it happens, you know, even obviously with the Renton and, you know, series as well. You see that handshake line. You see Brett Pesce here when Carolina beat New Jersey. It's just, you know, it's quite emotional when you do go through the battle of winning a hockey series and shake hands at the end of it.
Yeah, this weekend we had both the teams that did advance that are going to face each other in the next round, which will be interesting. But we got to see the double OT on Sunday night. I wonder for you, when you are in a Game 7, because I went back and looked in your history, you have played in a double OT Game 7 and an overtime Game 7. Like, how do you shift from, okay, this obviously is do or die in general, but now this every shift is do or die. Every time you touch the puck and you try to clear it is do or die. Every shot could be like the end of the series or the beginning of the next round. Like, that adrenaline, but also trying to keep it intact and keep it in check. Like, how much more does it spike when it's overtime, Game 7, and every single thing you do could be the rest of your season or start of golf season, I guess?
Yeah, I think, that's a good question because, you know, a lot of people have kind of asked me that, you know, kind of since I retired, kind of what was it like, you know, in those rooms, how did you approach it? You know, I guess the best way I could describe it is it was just fun. And I would do my best in the locker room to keep it fun, whether it be, you know, game seven regulation, and especially in overtime. I would look around the room and pick out a couple guys and be like, isn't this fun, boys? This is a heck of a lot of fun, isn't it? Someone's going to be a hero, and it's going to be in here. And it just kind of loosens up people. And because you can't play with apprehension. You can't play tight. You won't be the player that, you know, that the team expects you to be and the team wants you to be. And, you know, I always looked at, man, I have an opportunity to be, you know, a winner here and maybe make a difference in a game, as opposed to, ooh, I don't want to be the guy that makes the error that costs us the game. And that's a big thing that I think a lot of players wrestle with.
Okay, let's talk about a series that has the potential to go seven. That's a rematch of that series a couple years ago involving you with your former teams in Carolina and Washington. You know, Carolina's been hungry for third-round success. We all know it, right? They've had a lot of success in the playoffs, but winning a game in the third round has been elusive to this point. What do you like about the team this year? How is it different? What stands out to you in terms of a difference maker for a Carolina team that's trying to push it over that hill still?
Well, it's another year of experience, right? It's another year of failure. And with failure, as long as you just keep getting up, you're learning, right? And we've been in the playoffs seven straight years. And you know, we want more. The city wants more. The players want more, right? And you know, that's just kind of human nature, right? The more you get, the more you want. And we want to just take that next step. And we've been beaten down the last couple of years. And, you know, that's only, you know, made it to you know, that much more, I guess, emotional for these guys that are in this right now, being like, all right, this is the year, we're really going to do this. And, you know, we have a great opportunity in front of us. We keep giving ourselves kicks at the can, right? You keep getting into the playoffs, you keep getting opportunities, and, you know, you work your tail off and you hope that this is the year that we break through, and we expect it to be, and we hope it will be too.
Yeah. Took care of business pretty quickly against the Devils. I wonder, when you look at that series on paper, a 4-1 series lead, like, it's not like it was so much, I guess, adversity, but what learning lessons can the team take in a series like that, that feels on paper like it was a big time easy win, but really wasn't? And you're going to go against a much tougher opponent against the Capitals, who are going to be just one step harder. Like, what do you take from a quick series round one into round two?
Yeah, it's certainly important to be healthy at this time of year, and it takes a little bit of luck to be that as well. I mean, unfortunately for Jersey, they're missing, you know, their best player, and then, you know, they start missing another defenseman, and another defenseman goes down. So, you know, they just certainly didn't have their full complement of players, but we took care of business, which is what we had to do. So rest is important. Rest is really big. We've had 10 days here to prepare for the next round. We're excited for it, and you know, we know Washington is going to prove a big test, and they play a big game of hockey. There's going to be a lot of finished checks, and we have to expect that, be ready for it, and take it head on.
A breakout game in round one for Andrei Svechnikov. How big is it for your group when he's playing at a peak level?
Well, he has to be for us to win this year, and certainly to win this series. He's going to have to be great. That's exactly what it is. And he's one of our best players. You know, the ACL has certainly slowed him down, and you keep waiting for that moment when Svech is, you know, going to be the Svech that we all expect him to be night in, night out. And what a huge step, as you said, in this playoff. He's a playoff performer. He is. When it gets big, he buckles down, he finishes checks. He's a playoff guy. And, you know, as I said, for him to really take that next step and get some confidence and see pucks go in the back of the net, that's a really big sign, positive sign for our team, because we're going to need everybody.
There's a guy that way back in for the Four Nations, Justin and I talked a lot about, Jacob Slavin, who I think made the case to be maybe one of the best players at the Four Nations faceoff. And he isn't a player that you're tuning into every night when you're watching NHL games to be like, I got to watch the Jacob Slavin highlights. But I think after that Four Nations face-off, a lot of casual fans, a lot of people that don't watch every single Hurricanes game, were just like, this guy is legit. Now, like, how important is his success and his trajectory for this team? Because, like, I think I was in awe watching him for USA, and now we'll be seeing what he does in this series.
Yeah, I mean, he's been our best defenseman for a while now. And the things that he does, I mean, every young player wants to watch Cale Makar, right? They want to watch, you know, Quinn Hughes. They want to watch, you know, the flair, the offense. But when you really dial it down and see what defense is all about, I mean, not only in hockey, but this guy is the best athlete in every sport that I've seen. I used to consider myself a good athlete, and he's like humbled me in like every sport that we play, you know, whether it be ping pong in the room or whether it be basketball, you know, playing pickup or tennis or something. Like he's just got that athletic gene in him. But playing hockey and playing against the best certainly opened a lot of eyes for him. And for young defensemen who you know, you still need defensemen who could play defense in this league. Everyone's looking for that offensive guy. But when you look, you know, certainly for young players, that's a guy that they should be watching night in and night out, see where a stick is, see him knock pucks out of the air, see how he defends and very rarely gets beat. And at the same time, doesn't take penalties. So he's the whole package, our best defenseman for a long time. And it'll be a real big series for him as well.
Got to ask you about Ovi, a guy Jacob Slavin will be tasked with trying to shut down. You played with him 8-9 years ago. We mentioned that a couple times with the rematch with Washington and Carolina. You played in your late 30s. He's breaking records into his late 30s. Like, what, you know, knowing what you know, watching him this year, what was that like? And, you know, what sort of task do the Carolina Hurricanes have on their hands here trying to shut him down this series?
Yeah, it's wild. It's absolutely wild. I can't believe. I thought he might have been slowing down kind of when I left. And
I thought he was slowing down 12 years ago.
He's gone the other way. There's only a handful of players, and when I say handful, maybe like two or three players that when they get the puck, you get out of your seat and you're wondering what's going to happen, right? You're expecting him to score from wherever he is on the ice. You look at him on the power play, even on an entry, when the puck goes back to him at the blue line, he gets that wind up and you're like, oh boy, this could go in, right? There's only a certain number of guys that are able to do that. And obviously he's one, you know, we know the task, we know the power play spot. But more than that, he's a physical, impactful player as well. And, you know, sometimes you turn your attention all to him and then someone else is going to hurt you. So Washington's a deep team. Certainly, Ovi's, we got a guy we're going to have to keep our eye on. You know, we've got a little power play plan that we hope will work. Tim Gleason and Roddy and Jake Daniels have been working on that ad nauseum over the last few days. We've had some time to prepare, and we're excited to get it started tonight.
Yeah, just don't let him shoot. That's the plan. Let Ovi in his kitchen.
You remember in like Mites when they told you to go shadow a kid out there? They'd be like, hey, go shadow that kid so he doesn't score. You can't quite do that, but I wish we could.
Oh, that's funny. Before we let you go, saw big news yesterday in your household. We got an Ottawa 67s jersey or a hat for your young son.
Yeah. It's an exciting time for him just moving on and in his hockey career and going to play for Ottawa 67s next year. So I'm excited for him. You know, he's got to leave the nest at some point here. Daddy can't coach him forever. And he's ready. I'm excited for him to watch some hockey. So I'll be spending a little bit more time in Ontario.
All right. We'll swing by Toronto when you come on up, and we'd love to see you. We appreciate you coming on before a big game and a big series, and all the best to you and to the Ottawa 67s and your son. It's an opportunity.
You bet. Have a good one, guys.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it. That's Justin Williams, Hurricane Special Assistant to the General Manager, as they kick off round two against Ovi and the Capitals. That's a 7 p.m. start on Sportsnet in about 30 minutes.
Very cool. Great guest. Like, you know, he's not like talking about what they're going to do on the penalty kill. But, like, yeah, he's like kind of a part of the – he's coaching staff adjacent, if that makes sense.
He's privy to some info.
Yes, most coaching staff adjacent guys aren't doing radio the 2 hours before game one. So, credit to him.
Let's do some best before we take a break. We'll have Carter Hutton in about 5 minutes, and we'll do more goalie talk. But I feel bad for my first pick.
Yeah, you should have kept him around for this pick.
No, I'm going to go with Washington tonight as my best bet. They're starting at home. I feel good about the momentum that will give them. And they're plus 115 on the money line, just like a home dog for me. It's interesting to start a series, so I'll be picking them as my best bet, plus 115 tonight to kick things off against the Canes. I got a couple other ones for you. Canada at the IIHF Men's World Championships, plus 140. favorites.
You like that one. Is that the Crosby bump that he just doesn't lose?
It's the Crosby, McKinnon, Fleury bump. And if you've looked at any of the other rosters, Canada, like those two guys alone.
What happened? Like no one wants to play in this tournament? The rosters are bad?
Where's Connor Bedard? I just think that if you have Sidney Crosby and Nathan MacKinnon at the World Championships, you can beat anybody. And you're plus 140 to win, so I'm surprised.
Okay.
Those will be my two best bets. And then PWHL playoffs are kicking off tomorrow. We've got the Frost taking on the Victoire. It's the Frost and the Scepters.
No, and then board material,
I've
remember?
Got, yes, and I've got the Charge and the Victoire. And I think we will see an all-Canadian matchup in the final.
It's what it was supposed to be last year.
I think we will see the Scepters and the Victoire. So I was looking ahead at some playoff MVP futures, and I have four best bets, two from Montreal, two from Toronto for you, that are not the favorites. Like the favorite, obviously, Poulin. So love Poulin, but like I'm trying to find you some value. So I'll go with Laura Stacey at 23-1 to be playoff MVP. So the top line of Stacey, Poulin, and Gardner basically produce all of the points and goals for Montreal. So Stacey at 23-1. Makes a lot of sense to me. Gardner, who is the other winger on that line, 60-1. Like last year, the MVP it was basically point production, right? So if you think that
didn't they kind of lean to the name with Taylor Heisey?
They did with Taylor Heisey. It could have been Kava, but Heisey in the end was awarded the MVP. So if you're looking for name value, Stacey, good one there as well. Gardner, a little bit younger, but coming up with Team Canada. If you go to the Toronto side, Kristen Campbell, the goaltender, like if they're going to win this, probably going to have a huge role in that, and she's 14-1. But I like Hannah Miller at 25-1, who was like huge breakout star in terms of what she did offensively for Toronto, and 25-1 is really good odds there.
Okay.
There's a lot of goals, a lot of points, top line.
I love it. Okay, I'll go to the NBA. Tough night last night for Thunder backers like myself.
Wow, maybe
the worst coaching 15 seconds in the history of 15-second coaching jobs from Mark Daigneault. I don't know what was going on there. I need someone to explain that to me. I will go elsewhere, though, because they don't play tonight, that being the Thunder. The T-Wolves, Timber Puppies, -6.5 tonight. I'm going to play some alts. -14.5 is +255. Steph Curry and the very old, very experienced Golden State Warriors have played a lot of basketball, and if they get down in this game, it might be, okay, let's take a bit of a breather, a little bit of blow. 2 games ago, 48 hours removed from a game 7 where they had to give it a lot. I think it might get a little out of hand with Steve Kerr resting his guys down the stretch. So T-Wolves on the alt lines and just the 6.5 tonight.
Let's just put good a dagger start in my mom's heart.
It's just game 1. Good start for the Timber Puppies tonight.
Is that a thing? The Timber Puppies?
Yeah, it is.
I've never heard of that. I don't really like it, to be honest.
I like the Timber Puppies.
Okay, well, I like the Golden State Warriors because that's my mom's team.
I bet them.
Let's take a pick. Let's take a break, and we'll bring on Carter Hutton of Daily Faceoff. We'll go through all the goaltenders left standing. I'm really curious to get his perspective on Connor Hellebuck and what that potential boost might bring for him. Maybe just slay the Dragons, and he's off to win a Hart, a Conn Smythe, and a Vezina all in one 2 month span. We'll see. Pump the brakes on that. But Carter Hutton will join us on the other side of the break.
Hey, it's Nick Kiprios.
And I'm Justin Bourne.
We're diving deep into everything happening in Leafland and the biggest stories around the NHL.
Real Kipper and Bourne, weekdays from 4 to 6 on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Pregame here on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, The Fan, kicking off round 2, night 2, with Carolina, Washington at 7 p.m. and Edmonton, Vegas at 9 p.m. Both of those are game 1s. Only one game so far, and it was spicy. Maple Leafs with a big-time home win against Florida, but might have lost a key piece of their puzzle with Anthony Stolarz.
Yeah, we shall see. We talked a lot about goaltending depth for the Maple Leafs all season long. What does it even matter, though, in a playoff? You're only going to play one
guy. It matters now. Woo!
It's suddenly very, very much important for the Maple Leafs, who can turn to Joseph Woll, who's had a pretty good playoff history in his short career.
All right, let's talk goalies with Carter Hutton, who joins us of Daily Faceoff. Carter, we appreciate you coming on. It's been a while. How are things?
Good. It's good. It has been a while. So you guys got Jake Allen on Hockey in Canada. I guess I'm the backup, eh? I get called upon. I'm used to it, though, so
you're,
it's all good.
But you're Joseph Woll in this situation. We need you now. We need you to come in and save the day. So let's start with this because it's been a hot topic today, of course, the Anthony Stolarz injury and then Joseph Woll coming in. I want to start just with Joseph Woll because we'll get into the Stolarz of it. But, like, he comes in last night. Like, how hard of a spot is that? Hasn't played in basically 3 weeks, and he's thrust into a game against a very spicy Florida Panthers team. And I don't think he played amazing, but I didn't even expect him to be playing. So just like the mentality of being in that spot and like what you can expect if he gets a proper start maybe tomorrow night.
Yeah, you know, it's never easy, right? It's one of those things at times it's almost the adrenaline takes over, right? You just try to get in there and try to get up to speed. And I think a great clip of that was Marc-Andre Fleury mic'd up the other night when he got in there and he's slashing the guy and he's like, I'm trying to get in the game. You can tell he's having a lot of fun. But Joseph Woll is a different player, right? He's a lot more stoic and he's, you know, keeps to himself and you can tell his focus. But he's been in this situation before, right? This is 2 years now in the playoffs where he's come in, you know, obviously in the series against Florida before where he came in and played very well, right? I think giving up in the two losses he had, gave up three and lost an overtime and another one only gave up one. So he's been in this before. And again, last year with Samsonov, the way he had played, they went to him. And then in game seven, obviously we had the injury. We didn't have Joseph Woll. So he's been through it before, which I think is important, right? You have that mental fortitude to go in there and manage it. And if there's a younger goalie in the league that I feel confident managing this moment, it's Joseph Woll. And that's the fact of the matter where I think Craig Berube came out pretty earlier and has been Stolarz is the guy. But it's nice to have a guy in the wings like Joseph Woll, who arguably I think has a higher ceiling than Anthony Stolarz. I think has more potential to be a higher end goalie in his time. But right now, you know, I think Craig Berube's riding the hot hand in Stolarz, but this is a great safety net for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Okay, let's go to the Stolarz situation last night. And a lot of people are talking about it. Few have lived it. You have. So I'm excited for this. Two instances that are, you know, have been circled as potentially damaging shots to Stolarz, one being the shot that hit him around the chin early on in the game. He stayed in, but snapped off his helmet and he looked like a little stunned by it. And then, of course, the elbow, forearm, fist from Sam Bennett. Let's start with Bennett's role here. Like, how often in your, like in a game, 60 minutes, you're out there on the ice, are you feeling and receiving unwanted contact kind of in your blind sides? It feels like something that happens a lot. Very rarely is it something that seems as damaging as it was, unless, like, you know, you're getting actually run into, like we do see every now and then. But that was, you know, a hockey play to a certain extent and contact that was not necessarily like overly violent, but in the end did do some damage. So what's your take on not necessarily what Bennett did or what should happen to Bennett, but how often that sort of thing happens to an NHL goaltender?
It happens often. It happens a lot. You know, not in the magnitude of, you know, there is times where you get run and I've had it happen to me. I've had, you know, concussion symptoms. I've had to leave games, but you have to guess. I trust the spotter in that situation. And I feel bad for them because of the Reinhardt shot, because that's one where the helmet comes off. Your helmet could come off in any situation. And he's a warrior. This is Anthony Stolarz. This isn't a new age player. This is a guy who's going to wear it on his chin and play hard and try to play through everything. So that being said, I think there was effects from that. I know I'm not trying to act like I'm a concussion specialist by any means, but I've been in this situation. The adrenaline is running. And something that happened similar to me, I was hit one time when I was playing in Buffalo by Ivan Provorov. An elbow to the head and my helmet came flying off. I probably should have left the game at that point. I finished the period. Then in between periods, I had symptoms and I had a concussion. I had to work my way back from it. But in the moment, like, you're not ready to leave. Even if someone's talking to you, you want to keep playing. And I think when he went to the bench, you're still feeling that adrenaline. And then the Bennett hit on top of that was kind of the icing on the cake. And again, it's an intentional dirty play by Bennett. Like, anyone thinking that this is just an accident has never been around a hockey rink and doesn't know Sam Bennett, because he's going to the net, he's trying to create costs, but it's not a vicious play. And that's where it's that gray area with hockey. And again, there's been so many times where Sam Bennett has been at the wrong side of these situations, but it's also a reason why teams love him and they know that he plays on the edge. And I think it was a bit over the edge, but I think it was capped off with that situation of, you know, what had gone earlier with Anthony Stolarz. And, you know, I think the main thing is, I can't stress enough that you start to realize it now that I'm removed from the game and I'm a dad and a family man. There's so much more to life, right? My career was ended with like an ankle injury. And then you start worrying about how you're going to deal with things after the fact, right? So I think for Anthony Stolarz, the best thing right now is time off to make sure he's ready to go. And I got to assume we're not going to see him again in this series. You know, that being said, I just know what it takes to come back from a concussion. Hopefully it's not that bad, but it, you know, obviously it was a very scary situation, especially when he started throwing up on the bench.
How equipped are helmets nowadays for absorbing what we saw. The shot from Reinhart, again, you see a shot like that once a game.
Off.
I mean, tons of times a game. It snaps off, but I heard some commentary about, you know what, helmets are made so perfectly nowadays that that wouldn't cause that sort of head trauma. What's your thought on that?
You know what? I wish I would have did a little more homework, because I don't know exactly what helmet Anthony Stolarz wears. But when we had a problem actually when CCM came out with a helmet and it only had one hole on the side. There was a few guys that had suffered concussions because of the force impact wasn't diluted through those holes. So one of the big makers in Pro Mask, which is represented by Vaughn, they do custom fitting masks. And when I switched over from the mask that I used to wear to Vaughn, I used to get ringers all the time, which is probably a bad way to say it, but that's when I first came in. You get a stinger here or there, you just deal with it. That was part of the life. But so what they would do is they custom fit you for a mask, and they put a board on your face, and you have a tube coming out of your mouth, and they plaster over your whole face, and they get it fitted for your helmet. And it helps, honestly, so much. And I think that is an important factor in this scenario, is the equipment is really kept up with the speed of the shots too. And I think guys have been protected, and it's more for me, the hit on Bennett is how his neck gets jacked. Right. So it's not necessarily always going to be the force impact of the puck. It's when your neck gets jacked and stuff like that. I've had a few times wrapped around the post, you know, trying to freeze a puck, and you feel the ill effects later. And I know there's a good clip. If you ever look it up, Marcus Foligno sends me for a ride in Buffalo, and I finished the game. He flips me on my head. And after the game, I remember the next morning waking up and I was an absolute mess. So the adrenaline definitely can take over. And anyone who's been an athlete understands that.
Okay, Google is telling me that Anthony Stolarz uses a Pro's Choice helmet.
Yeah, so that's about the best in the business right there, is Pro's Choice through Vaughn. So that being said, if you know you get on the wrong spot, and a lot of guys, you look at Mackenzie Blackwood, he is missing teeth from taking a puck in the cage, goodness. Right? And these are supposed to protect you. It depends on how you wear it. And I was more of a overly protective guy, maybe because I was out of position too much. I was always worried about getting hit, but I would wear the beefed up neck guard and the actual throat dangler. When you look at Anthony Stolarz, he has a lot of neck exposed. You see, it's the same thing with Connor Hellebuck. I'm very surprised nowadays with the speed of the game and how a lot of times it's different when you're square to the puck, but when a east-west play happens or off a rebound, sometimes you can be exposed a little bit. So it's always worrisome, players like that have so much neck exposed.
I remember when I was in like Tyke Select and everyone had to play goalie and you had to like use everyone's gear, and it was like a hockey helmet, but then you had that stupid dangling chin guard. Oh, yeah. And then the big neck guard that you tucked in. Like, I played like once and I think we lost by like a touchdown, so it wasn't for me. But yeah, it looks like more sleek now, this Pro's Choice helmet. So those listening, shout out Pro's Choice. Okay, let's move to the Jets, because I think there was no bigger storyline goaltending wise in the first round than Connor Hellebuck and like the crazy roller coaster that was. How do you explain the home and away splits, the getting pulled on all those games, and I guess finding a way through it in the end and advancing through a double OT to get to the second round, like what that might mean for Connor Hellebuck as we evaluate his playoff performance?
You know, honestly, I think it's great. I think the fact that he was able to, you know, he gives up two quick goals, and, you know, I think everyone and their dog watching that game was like, you know, do you pull him? Do you not pull him? Where are you at? Like, if you pull him, is that his end of his era as a Jet? Like, you know, do you have to move on from him? Because you clearly can't win with him. They stick with him. He performs well in overtime, makes some key saves and some big saves. Even the third goal I didn't love. I think he's shifting. He's moving before the shot comes. But I think that is something that he can gain a little like confidence from, right? You don't lose talent overnight. Mitch Korn, famous goalie coach, would always say that to me. And I think as I gained experience, you really start to understand that how much it is between your ears and how important it is to manage the mental side of the game. So for Connor Hellebuck, I think this is going to be a big test. You talk about Dallas, a dynamic team. You see what Colorado did to Hellebuck last year in the playoffs. But that being said, I think when comes playoff time, the predictability of the game kind of goes out the window, where in the NHL, there's 32 teams, and at times you're playing a team that is a little rough around the edges, right? They're not really generating the same kind of quality chances, and Winnipeg is a very good team that makes the game more predictable in the defensive zone. Now you get to the playoffs where you have more time to scout a guy. You have more time to, you know, find out things that are going to get to him. And I want to give St. Louis goalie coach Dave Alexander a lot of credit. He was the goalie coach for Team Canada as well. He understands goaltending. He understands the psyche of it. And he works very well hand-in-hand with the coaches in St. Louis to make a game plan of how to attack a guy and how to, you know, his weaknesses and where to go. And it's always easy to say that, but I think for the predictability goes out of the game in the playoffs and the amount of traffic and tips. And I think that's where Connor Hellebuck's game gets a little bit sloppy because of the lack of athleticism. And And not to say he's not athletic, because what he does is amazing. But you look at Anthony Stoller's, where he has a little more second save capability, where if there's a rebound, he's big, he's explosive, he makes those saves. Where I think at times Connor Hellebuyck, because of his history and his past, he gets a little too locked in. And what I saw in game seven and overtime, he was being much more aggressive and not stuck in the blue paint. And I think that paid dividends for the Winnipeg Jets.
He'll have his hands full with that Dallas team game one tomorrow night on Sportsnet. Let's go to the Oilers. Oilers Vegas game one tonight. Calvin Pickard will be the choice for Edmonton. How do you look at the Pickard selection? Is it he's giving them something, you know, that's considered plus, or it's just, hey, this is the best alternative to Stuart Skinner, who frankly just couldn't get it done?
I think right now it's just because of the scenario, because he won four straight and got them through to the next round. I think this is a scenario where we're going to see Stuart Skinner. Like, at the end of the day, if I don't think we're sitting here in the Edmonton Oilers are lifting a Stanley Cup and if Calvin Pickard is their goalie. And that's nothing against Calvin, because he's been unbelievable and he's been serviceable. But you're going to get to a point where three or four goals against is not going to get it done. And I think Stuart Skinner has that upside for them to carry it. And again, just kind of like the Joseph Woll factor of him being thrown into the Wolves, Skinner has dealt with this before. He's been Jekyll and Hyde last year. You look back to that Vancouver series, there's a few key moments where Skinner was on the bench and Calvin Pickard came in and played admirably. So I think this is one of those ones you kind of ride it till it breaks with Calvin Pickard. He's winning games. It's going well. But I do feel at some point you're going to see Stuart Skinner, because, you know, he's a couple goals away from winning the Stanley Cup last year. And he was a difference maker down the stretch. And it's a little product of the lack of his play, and I think in their D zone. Hopefully they can clean that up, because Vegas is not going to give them anything for free. This is going to be a tough series, and we all know the way that Vegas defends, and Jack Eichel is going to give it, you know, obviously McDavid and Draisaitl a handful.
And Aiden Hill and that for Vegas. Like, Vegas had to kind of get their act together against Minnesota. I think they were surprised a little bit and how that series went, and then won three games in a row to beat the Wild. Like, how do you evaluate Aiden Hill's performance and all of that to get Vegas through to then face Edmonton and the Oilers?
You know what? I honestly feel like we just discredited Minnesota more than mm-hmm. Vegas didn't perform, right? I think we just kind of had this overshadowing fact that Minnesota snuck in, you know, the injuries, and then they get some guys back healthy. Gustafson played very well. You got to see what Kaprizov can do. You know, he would have been in the Hart finalist if he didn't get hurt. That's obviously a fact of that. Like, the way he had played has been so good. And I think this team is going to be something dangerous moving forward in Minnesota. But again, I think Vegas started to find their game and find their legs, and they were getting it done. You look at what Howden had done in that series, the overtime winner, three goals. That's the depth you need, right? And we're looking at a Toronto Maple Leafs team where we're asking who's going to be those depth guys that can find those goals to push a team over the top. And then when you look at their top line, they get going in the last game and they win that game for them. Jack Eichel was awesome. Mark Stone, like, the pass to Jack Eichel, the just lays it up there on a tee for him to skate onto. That's world-class stuff. So Vegas is a dangerous team. And for Aiden Hill, he played his best hockey in the playoffs. He's kind of like the Stuart Skinner for me. He's a big guy. You know, he can be boxy at times and he gets locked in. But they also have a big back end that not overly physical, but they take up space and they take up, you know, they just sticks and legs and bodies in the way and keep them to the outside. This is a very dangerous team for me. So before the playoffs started, Vegas was kind of my team I thought would make it out of the West. And I think this is going to be a big challenge here in Edmonton with these guys.
All right, let's touch on all four series and finish up here with Carolina and Washington, which starts in about 15 minutes or so. Freddie Anderson expected to start for Carolina. Logan Thompson will counter. It feels like to me, you know, Carolina's kind of left things to chance a little bit with the goaltending, and that's, I guess, commentary on Freddie Anderson and his ability to stay in the net. But when he's playing, he's generally given Carolina really, really good minutes. I guess the same could be said in some ways for Logan Thompson. He signs the big deal this year, but the back half of his season doesn't match the front half of his season. If everything's ideal, perfect, Freddie Anderson plays however many games is needed, and same for Logan Thompson, who do you give the goaltending edge to in this series?
I think right now I'm going to give it to Logan Thompson, just in the fact of the matter that Carolina's going to struggle to create offense, in my opinion. So, like, I look at how much trouble the Devils gave them with, like, a weaker back end with a few guys out of lineup. You look at Hamilton being out, Hughes being out, and then just, you know, where they were at. And I think Washington is a heavier team. I think they're going to make it harder on Carolina for a team who traditionally hasn't been able to create a lot of offense. And I've always been a big Freddie Anderson fan. Like, I played against Freddie so many times. I look back to playing in Nashville. He came in for John Gibson in a 7-game series for the Ducks against when I was on the Preds. And he was a difference maker. He was unbelievable. We were able to take them in seven. But he's always had that black cloud over him in the playoffs, whether it's poor play or poor goals or injuries. And again, if he can put it together, it's a dangerous team. But right now, the way Logan Thompson manages the crease, I think he saw more of an offensive juggernaut in Montreal than he's going to see in Carolina, in my truthful opinion. And he made timely saves. You know, he kind of got over that hump. So I give him the edge in that sense, you know, going into Montreal in that hostile environment. You know, he was good when it really mattered. So, but again, this is going to be a good series. I love this one. This is definitely a coin flip, but I like Washington in this one.
Me too. I'm on Washington. Justin's
there we
on
go. There we go.
Carolina. He's
You're
just
all
drinking
on
the Kool-Aid.
Hey, okay.
What do you make of Marc-Andre Fleury retirement tour and then being like, I'll go play for Team Canada, the Worlds with Sid?
He doesn't want to retire.
I
he
love
wants
it.
To come back next year.
He's
I'm,
the best.
I'm convinced of it.
I love it. I absolutely love it. I just think it's unbelievable. You know, he's a guy that loves the hockey. And, you know, it's funny. He's a guy that I watched kind of growing up. And then you get a chance to play with him and get to know him and the way that he competes. And not to take away from it, the fact is, like, I think of how much work that goes into it. Like, now being retired, I get to go do my little workouts that yeah. are glamour workouts. Yeah. And I'm working
like
biceps and chest and all the yeah. things that had nothing to do with goaltending and how unrewarding it was, you know, not unrewarding outside of goaltending, right? You put so much effort into being good. And I realized this when I went from a backup to a starter, like, the amount of energy I have to output to play in games. And then all of a sudden I went from playing one game every 10 days or 2 weeks when I was playing with Rene to three or four games a week. And I was hanging on by a thread. Like, you know, I just wasn't physically able to do it. And I played an athletic game like Fleury. So what he's been able to do with his ability and mindset and just physical demeanor, and the fact of the matter, he does it with a smile on his face, whether it's a game or practice or whatever it is. So this is just awesome for him to, you know, put on Team Canada's jersey one more time. Maybe the last time. Who knows what he does after this? He might be playing in the senior AAA league here in Canada when it's done, but he seems like he can't get away from the game.
Yeah, that's true love for the game. It's really nice to see. And, you know, him, Nate, and Sid is going to be fun. I'm going to be tuning into those
Get
games.
Get them all in Colorado next year.
All right.
Run it back.
He could be like an e-bug.
He's still got some game left. He's got game left, too. He can play.
All right, Carter, we appreciate you coming on. One thing I always think of when we talk to you is you should color in the countries that you go to on the map.
You know what? We're building an office right now, and I'm going to be moving. This is my kid's room. So this is Palmer Hutton's room. So he's getting, I always say I'm Carmen Sandiego because I got the map in the background. But one day I'm going to have my own place.
Okay. Well, you're growing up. Look at you go. Next couple times we chat, you'll have a whole new background. But we do appreciate you coming on. This was a blast.
Kid's going to be a geography.
Yeah, he's going to love the world. He's going to be like, I'm going to this country. Very sweet. Carter, we appreciate you coming on. Enjoy the rest of the playoffs. We'll chat soon.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
That's Carter Hutton of Daily Faceoff. That's fun. I used to have that type of map, but you could like scratch off the countries you've been to. So it was, you know, didn't have many scratched off, but it looked cool.
I think that was gifted to my father. I've never seen it, though.
Oh.
I've seen it busted out.
How many countries do you think he's been to, CC?
A lot.
Like over 30?
Oh, yeah.
Over 40?
Yeah.
Over 50?
Probably, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. How does he have time for that?
I don't know. I mean, a couple Olympics.
Yeah,
travel.
Olympics would help. How many of those just for pleasure? Half?
No, probably not 25, but a good amount.
Cool.
He likes to get out there.
Good for season.
Doesn't like to document it, though, apparently.
Carmen Sandiego.
Yeah.
Okay, you have 1.5 minutes to tell me why I should believe in the OKC Thunder.
Ooh, okay.
Because that was disappointing, Justin.
Yeah, it was. Probably because their coach won't do that again. Like, if you don't know what happened, there was 15 seconds-ish left. Thunder were up by 3, and they didn't want to allow Denver to go for the 3 to tie. So they started fouling, and they basically, 15 seconds turned into 15 minutes, fouling back and forth. And Denver, because they were given the opportunity to continue playing, hit more free throws in the end and had a chance to actually hoist up a game winner and hit the game winner, despite them never being in that position, never should have been in that position. And the most important thing is here, as they were trading fouls in 15 seconds, they actually caught Jokic off the court at one point, but they fouled and allowed him back in, setting the stage for Aaron Gordon.
Like that series events has never like, ever happened.
You essentially, you would have had to run up the court in 10 seconds with Jokic not on the floor and hoist up a 3 to tie. And they decided to prolong the game and allow Jokic to come back in. Chet Holmgren misses his free throws. It was a complete mess. The Thunder won't do that again.
You still
they were rusty.
You still believe in the Thunder.
Yeah, they're rusty. Okay. 9 days off. Rest and rust. You know, they can be, they can
all
be
right,
equal.
So they're back in it. They're still
They'll
your pick.
Fine. They'll be fine.
Okay. They're still your pick?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Celtics still okay?
Yeah, they're fine.
They lost.
Cavs are the one seed that's in, or the high-end favorite that's in trouble.
Okay. All right. Thanks, everyone, for watching and listening. Carolina and Washington Game 1 is up next later tonight. The Blue Jays and the Angels at 9 p.m. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 1. We'll see you tomorrow.